There's just so many questions, questions you want answers to, but everyone else, I mean, everyone who hears about the loss wants to know, did you see it coming? You know, what happened? There's just so many unanswered questions that you navigate.
The why, you know, everybody asks that question. And I remember back then, a lot of people asked me why. It's like, you think I have all the answers to all this? Like, come on. It had to do with the brain. It's a disease of the brain. Mm-hmm. And I remember being at peace with that mm-hmm. part of it, because mm-hmm. it's like, why am I going to rack myself, you know, and try to figure out this why? You know, there's not going to be just one answer to the situation, but it has to do with the brain, and we know very little about it. It deals with an organ in our body that we know very little about. We know everything else about the body, you know, mostly, but except the brain. It's a very complex organ. So it's like, that's the why.
Well, everybody, welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm your host, Emily Lomenzo Washkovic. And today I have with me Jay Laurie of Proteus Pools. I love that name. Jay, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I'm excited. We have a lot to dig into today, and we were connected in kind of an odd way. You own a pool business, and I used to know some guys in a pool business association of sorts that you're a part of, and they sent you my way because you have an incredible life story that you've been sharing, and I'm really excited to dig into it today. But before we do, let's just tell everyone who you are. What is your life like right now? Who are you as a person? Give me the rundown on Jay.
I am 48 years old, married, have a daughter.
She's adorable.
Thanks. She is. She's a gift. And I own and operate a pool maintenance company for the last 20 years, which I can't even believe I'm saying that. It's just crazy how time flies. Love what I do. Fourth generation in the area that I grew up in. So I work where I live, which is cool. Mm-hmm. So it's local. I love all of that. But I most like, and I am affiliated with, in the pool industry, organization called IPSA, Independent Pool and Spa mm-hmm. Service Association, which I love doing that too. It's a nonprofit, so there's a lot of volunteering there. And I'm also involved in another men's organization called the Iron Council. Mm-hmm. Shameless plug, sorry.
No.
I love that as well. I've been getting a lot of growth out of that too. I love helping people. That's something that I really love to do. That's become very clear to me in the last couple of years of my life. Thanks to just a lot of good people around me kind of telling me, you know, dude, you got to stop being blind to all this, you know? So it's great to have this opportunity with you and to share my testimony, mm-hmm. you know, with my business and a loss and all that, how that's all intertwined together.
Talk to me about the pool business. I mean, you really had a fun entry point into this industry, but you first thought, like, I'm going to get a regular job. I'm going to get a big kid job. Talk to us about your journey to entrepreneurship.
There was some resistance to that at that point, but really I had an entrepreneur heart. My first gig that I could actually remember creating was, I was a little boy, maybe 7, 8 years old. I don't remember, but I had a radio flyer wagon and I put a bunch of rags, Windex and some wax. And I went door to door asking people if I could wax their license plate for money.
That's amazing.
I loved it. And people did it, man. Like, that's what I was doing. But I just loved, I loved making money and being creative in that. I mean, I would pull like an old rabbit cage out of the trash and hang out on the corner of my street. I grew up on a corner, so it was very busy traffic. And I'd hold up a sign, you know, like $5. And then throughout the years, it just kind of evolved into other little businesses. I was big time into like BMX bikes, and I would just... I was mechanically inclined. I grew up in basically in a garage, tinkering and stuff with my dad, my brother, and my mom. And I had like a little BMX little business, putting bikes together, helping kids that didn't have tools and the know-how. Dude, I got some new handlebars. Can you put them on? sure, you know?
Yeah.
And then they didn't want their old ones. So I'm like, well, I'll take that because I'm going to sell them. Yeah. Just like, you know,
flipping cash.
Totally, dude. Yeah. Like, that's what I loved doing that.
Oh,
it was
my gosh.
So, it was just, and that was the name of that. Now that we're talking about the name of that business, the BMX business, was called Team Tech.
You were creative with your names.
I guess so, huh?
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it was fun. And that was a day of no AI, by the way.
Yeah. Oh,
I aged myself, but that's okay.
All invented off of your mind.
Yeah. But yeah, and then just later on, you know, like let's say like in high school.
Okay.
All of my friends were just college bound. Mm. And I just I'm not a college bound kind of dude. Like, you know, I'm like blue collar through and through. But I really wanted to be white collar. I really wanted that job that all my friends were going, you know, like I was missing out on that. I felt like that's what I had to do. It didn't feel natural, but it's like, I really want to do that like everybody else. But I got to visit everybody in college, which was great because I was able to live that part of the life. Right.
Yeah.
But I went to junior college and, I loved computers at the time and I wanted to get into computer networking and like build systems. Because I was good with my hands. But all the while, I was working for a title company from high school all the way through junior college. And they employed me for a long time, which was great. I'm just going to graduate. And all the while, my brother Jeff had a pool maintenance company. Mm-hmm. And he would egg me on throughout the years, like, dude, start a route. And I'm like, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to be a pool guy. They're all dirtbags, you know, like they, at the time they were a lot of them, you know, nowadays things have cleaned up a little bit. Okay. But I just didn't want to do that. You know, I want to get this job. You know, so I got my certifications and the company I was working for offered me a job, in the IT department. I interviewed, IT didn't want me. So then they're like, well, we'll put you behind a desk in customer service and you can answer phones and then work on customer services, computer issues. I'm like thinking to myself, great, great opportunity, you know, got behind a desk, couldn't stand it. I was like, oh no, what did I do? What did I do? When I worked for this company, I was driving around and I was a file clerk basically, but there's multiple warehouses that I drive to. So I had a lot of freedom, you know, and I get my work done in 2 hours and have like 6 hours to like study. I just crushed it. But man. And so, of course, you know, I would complain to my brother about that, you know, and he would tell me, I told you, bitch, that I told you you're supposed to do a route, man. I'm like, okay, dude, let's do it.
And he was quite a bit older than you. So, you know, he's kind of like showing you life and not like 2 years older. I mean, you have 7. A significant difference.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that dynamic. I mean, he was just like, he had it figured out. He's doing stuff. And you kind of looked to him for a lot of life guidance and just, I mean, he was your North Star kind of on how to do stuff.
He was. Jeff was really smart. And he worked for a bank at the merchant teller. I'll tell this story about how he got into the business. He was a really smart guy. And he was like, he could have crushed school if he wanted to. And he didn't. I was so frustrated because school was so hard for me.
Yeah.
And here's my brother like, yeah, whatever, you know, get A's. I'm like, dude, you bastard, you know?
Yeah.
But he worked for a bank and worked at the merchant window back then. So all the merchants would specifically go to a merchant teller and do all their banking. So he got to know all of the merchants in the town. Like, what a better way to like vet like what makes money and what doesn't, right? He was a smart dude. And so there was this guy in a tank top and board shorts that would walk in and cash a bunch of checks. And then my brother would be like, where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to go surf. You know, I'm going to leave to go surfing. I'm like, so Jeff told me about this. He's like, I'm going to start a pool route. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, go for like a banking job to like board shorts
cleaning
and cleaning
pool pools,
you know. Yeah. But he totally crushed it. He killed it. Like,
and he loved it. He loved being outside. He loved working with his hands.
Yep. Yeah. And he loved to help people too. Mm-hmm. And he was extremely successful, very successful.
Yeah.
And this was like during a time period where it was like late 90s, early 2000s. And so there wasn't like a lot of education available.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot of networking available. There was IPSA, but it was not something that he was interested in.
Yeah.
But if he had a problem, he'd seek out answers for it, you know, and he was I mean, if you saw my brother do like a plumbing job, it was amazing. So he was really good at what he did. He loved doing what he was doing. Provided us a lot of good times, bought like a couple speedboats.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to Havasu and partying. Like, he provided good times for all of us. Mm-hmm. And that's what that, and he bought a home. So I'm thinking like, well, this is going to be good. I think I could probably make this happen. And so he would encourage me. So I throttled back on my hours at the title company, and he started giving me accounts. I had like 9. And then, that's how I kind of started, you know, and we worked every Friday together. We called it Filter Friday. So we
love it.
We would clean filters. Mm-hmm. And do like plumbing jobs or whatever. And that's how I really learned the business.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and what I like about when I was first hearing your story and kind of learning is I can just picture you're out in the field, you know, getting into this new industry where it's not just skimming pools, like there's chemical balancing and all this stuff. And you're calling him like, what do I do? Oh, this thing popped up, this happened. And he was like your guru. I mean, he was just not only confident in his own right, but really liked helping teach you and other young pool pros, like how to kind of do this business. That was very much his personality. We're talking about him in the past tense, and I do want to talk about the loss. But before we get into that, I want you to just kind of share like him. I mean, your descriptions of him, I feel like I can picture him from all the times I've heard you talk about him, but we haven't given you a chance to like describe him yet on the show. So describe him for me.
Complete opposite is me. All right. So that there's the structure. Like, he was very mellow, great dry sense of humor, curly brown hair, brown eyes, but gentle, and also wanted to make sure that everybody was having a good time. If somebody had a problem, whether it was financial problem or needed, if like somebody needed a tool, like he would always like help. So that was the kind of dude that he was. Very intelligent too. Mm-hmm. Very intelligent, just smart, great with people. Mm-hmm. Patient.
Yeah.
Opposite with me, you know, like not patient. And confident. Just he was my mentor, my lighthouse. Like, that's who he was in my life. You know, I ran every decision through him because I knew that I would probably get the best advice. Like, if people went to Jeff for a lot of things, like trying to decide what to do in a relationship, you go to Jeff, you know, or you need a tool, you go to Jeff. So he was definitely that way. Like, that was a lot of cool, characteristic traits of Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's come to this point where you lost Jeff. Can you tell us what happened with Jeff and also just where you were at in this period in time? Because this is almost 2 decades ago now. So set the stage for us of what life was like in this period.
He was, like 2008, there was like a recession and election going on. And there was just like a lot of like funky feelings going on during that time. And it was, I could tell he was very uneasy about it. He was listening to talk radio, reading the business section in the newspaper. Back then we read newspapers. and he just started to get really worried, you know, about business. And, you know, he started a family, he had a, you know, a 1.5 year old daughter. So he had a lot of concern on his mind, and he started to get just really worried and sad, which was unlike him, you know, it was unlike him. And I remember telling him, I'm like, dude, like, go down to the mall and see people, like, people are spending their money. Like, we're not going to lose our business or anything like that. But that's when I started to see things kind of shift for him. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is really weird. And he started getting this lower back pain. Mm. And this is all happening within like a 9-month period, which is like super fast.
When you're living it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't so he went to like the doctor for his low back and they couldn't like find anything out. And then that's when he was really started to get worried. Like, what am I like, what the hell is going on with me? You know? And Jeff was like a problem solver, you know, for others. Right. And so I could tell he was extremely frustrated. Like, what is wrong with me? I don't understand. Like, he didn't know. So he tried to seek some answers and he went to a psychiatrist. And that's kind of when the antidepressants were like an experiment, basically, you know, and they just were not working. And that was kind of the down slope for him when he got on those things. He was very frustrated on them too. It was sad to see the decline, you know, because it wasn't Jeff anymore.
Mm. And something that I think is important to point out is, this was at a period where conversations around mental health were happening even less than they are today, like significantly less. And so even the language you use to describe it now, you didn't necessarily have that language back then.
No, the language that I remember, I feel, you know, I felt bad about this, you know, after his suicide, but was like, I remember telling him, snap out of it, you know, like that shit doesn't work, man. You know, very ignorant days back then for me. I remember telling him, like, put post-it notes around your house and like think positive and shit like that. Just try to help him out. Or go to the park, read a book or something, try to get your mind off of it. It's just really hard to see him decline like that. And just not a lot of information. It was just hard to seek information about how to, you know, figure it out. Like, why is this happening? Or just, there was some, but just not a lot. But boy, I'll tell you, we were all very frustrated, you know, and he was too. I remember him being extremely frustrated. Thanks.
I can't imagine feeling like something is wrong, actually trying to seek help, and then being told nothing's wrong. I mean, that had to have been one of the most frustrating parts for him in the process, because it's not like he was just trying to navigate this on his own. I mean, he was reaching out and trying to get answers. And to be told by a health professional, well, nothing's wrong, but you can feel that something is not right. I mean, that would make anyone not feel good, you know?
I remember one of the psychiatrist suggested to him, like, you're probably going to be on these antidepressants for the rest of your life. And I remember that really pissed him off, you know, because it's like, he didn't say this, but I'm assuming the thoughts in his mind, like, I'm going to be like this forever. Crap, right? Like, that's how I would feel if a doctor told me, well, Jay, sorry, you're going to be on these for the rest of your life. Fuck that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I remember we were on our way to a job, one of my jobs, to clean a filter, and he was uncontrollably like upset. It just, that would happen during his depression. He would just get so upset. And I remember looking over and he just had goosebumps all over his body. Like, depression's legit, man. Like, it takes over your body. And I was learning that through his experience, like, whoa, you know, I'm like, dude, Jeff, pull over. I'm like, let's just go home. No, 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 dude, I want to help you with this. Like, let's just keep working, you know. That guy got up every single day and went to work, man, feeling the way that he felt. You know, that's something that I really admired about him, is he kept going, you know, and fighting. So that was a memory that I just remembered right now.
Yeah. And the physical side of it, I mean, that is what so many people don't know. When my now husband and I first started dating, he just started like vomiting all the time. Like, he would be throwing up all morning. And, you know, I'm like, what? Are you okay? What's going on? And finally figured out it was a symptom of generalized anxiety. And he didn't know that. And, you know, started different ways to kind of try to treat it and help it. But in the beginning, we were like going down a rabbit hole of thinking it was a physical ailment. We were not thinking about it being mental at all. And that's something I've learned in my own journey with mental health. But I also think when you see people around you who are struggling, there is that significant difference between everything they're feeling and what you can see, and you can't see a lot of it.
So with that being said, you know, after he passed, people would, like, friends of his would ask me questions, you know, like, well, what was he feeling? I'm like, I couldn't tell. But the one thing that I always shared was, you could be in Mexico with Jeff, right? Like, hanging out in Cabo, ice cold Corona, it's 75 degrees, you got your feet in the warm sand, and it's like chill time. But Jeff's right next to you, and he is experiencing cold, dark, and lonely. And like, that was like the best thing that I could come up with to help people understand what was going on with him, let alone what like depression can be like. Luckily, I've never experienced that before, but what I saw my brother go through is like what it looked like to me, you know, like a hollow person. It was so weird, man.
Well, and I've never had deep, deep depression. A lot of people with bipolar disorder do, but I've heard it described multiple ways. But the two that always kind of like stick with me are moving through sludge, like trying to move and you're like in like quicksand or mud. And then the other description, which it sounds like you can see in Jeff, is just like emptiness, nothing. Like they say sometimes that sadness doesn't even do it justice, because that would be a feeling. And sometimes the worst depression is a feeling of nothing. And even like you said, you could be sitting next to people you love or in a room of a party, you know, celebrating something positive, and that isn't going to change what's happening up here necessarily. Can you take us to the day that you lost Jeff? Tell us about that day.
September 9th, 2009. In the background, you know, my dad was going through depression too. So just keep that in the back of your mind. But getting out of gym class, you know, and I grab my phone and I see all these missed calls and like text messages, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Either something's going on with my dad or something's going on with Jeff, you know? And so, you know, I called my best friend, and he told me, he's like, I go, dude, what the hell is going on right now? He's like, dude, Jeff's gone, man. You know, killed himself. And I'm like, bastard. You know, I was mad at that point. You know, like just at that time, I'm like, you bastard, I can't believe you did that. I'll never forget that moment. I had to go to my sister-in-law and go, you got to go to your brother's house. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. And I mean, get to the house, and it's just like fire department's there and police are there and the morgues. I mean, it's just a shit show, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just a blur. But one thing that does stick out that was really sad is like my parents are like walking up to me, and I remember hearing my dad upset and like crying, but it was like a wail of upset. I've never heard that sound in my whole life. You know, I mean, that was a really a deep sound of loss, you know? And the other thing too is I was sitting on the couch, and this police officer sits down next to me, and it's like, I will have to disclose this. Like, I did not like cops at all at the time, you know, leading up to this moment. Like, don't talk to me. I don't want to deal with you right now. Like, this is the last person I want to talk to. And he sits down next to me, and I'm like, wonderful. And he's like, so you're Jay? And I'm like, yes. He goes, well, I'm looking around right now, and you seem to be the one that's going to have to be the leader of this family. Because everybody looks like they're in really rough shape. And I'm like, you know, bitching, like, the leader of the family is in the back of a van right now, you know, like, not supposed to be like that. You know, it's just not supposed to be like that. And they just really pissed me off at the time, but it was most likely necessary to tell me that. Because it probably saved my life. I was very grateful for that moment. At the time, it was not. Mm-hmm. But for him to say that to me really made a big, big difference in my life. I mean, it really shifted my mindset of going like, well, and like next couple of days after that, I'm like, well, there's some work to be done here, you know, and somebody's going to have to get to work here and like put the business back together again. And I wanted to be able to save the business for my sister-in-law and her family to at least get it back up and running again to make a decision on what to do with the business. Keep it, sell it, you know, scale back, whatever, right? I wanted to honor that. You know, my brother worked really hard at building that for me. For him. So I just started to kind of get into this mindset of like, you're going to have to start doing the right thing, man. You know, like I could have just thrown the towel and said, screw it. I'm just going to go ahead and feel sorry for myself and not do anything, you know, and do all the wrong things. And that's where I came up with this really goofy saying is it's easier to do the wrong thing, but it takes great amount of effort to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's just easy to just toss things aside and say, yeah, F it. I'm not going to do anything, you know? From that point on, it was just like, my head was down and just working, you know? Mm-hmm. All the while the station fire was happening in this area at this time. So it was like the hills were literally on fire, you know, like, wasn't as gnarly as the Eaton fire, but it was gnarly, you know, yeah. And like dealing and trying to put a business back together and run my own. I had help, you know, I had help putting all that together. Yeah. It was just, I don't know. It was a lot.
Well, anytime you lose someone, I mean, there's the paperwork, there's right. It's like all of the things that you have to do when someone dies, no matter how they die. But with suicide, I mean, there's just a whole different layer on top of all of the regular grief stuff. Can you describe for me what that was like? I mean, the way I think of it is like, there's just so many questions you want answers to, but everyone else, I mean, everyone who hears about the loss wants to know, did you see it coming? You know, what happened? There's just so many unanswered questions that you navigate. And I think that changes the grief experience.
There's a couple of answers that in there. The first one is, you know, the why. You know, everybody asks that question. And I remember back then a lot of people asked me why. It's like, you think I have all the answers to all this? Like, come on. But it had to do with the brain. It's a disease of the brain. Mm-hmm. And I remember being at peace with that mm-hmm. part of it because mm-hmm. it's like, why am I going to rack myself, you know, and try to figure out this why? You know, there's not going to be just one answer to the situation, but it has to do with the brain and we know very little about it. It's like you know, we said this before is it deals with an organ in our body that we know very little about. We know everything else about the body, you know, mostly, but except the brain. It's a very mm-hmm. complex organ. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's the why. You know, it's like, it's a disease. I'm not going to get, this is my outlook. I'm not going to get pissed off at somebody because they have cancer.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Screw you, dude. You had cancer. You died. I that just didn't make any sense to me. And so it's like, I want to heal, man. You know, like I wanted to heal from this and not be mad.
Yeah.
Because I know people can get mad at folks that do that. And to me, I can't, you know, watching people suffer from a loss like that, it's hard to watch. And I wanted to heal in a way that I just want to get a little bit of peace, you know, and acceptance. Because I wanted to honor my brother in that way. And that's something that I hope that people can get a little bit of that too out there. You know, like if they go through this type of loss, I want them to try and like maybe look at it maybe in that perspective as it is a disease, you know? I don't know.
I think that's really important. And I think it's also okay to be mad. Like, I'm sure. really glad that you worked through that. And that sounds like that was very healing for you. But I also want to validate, like, that emotion is fair and, you know, it's human. And how you choose to process it and honor your person, like, for everyone, that's going to look a little bit different. But for you, I think finding the way to not be mad at him was truly your path to healing. I mean, that was something you needed to do.
Yeah.
You really started seeking out all different ways to get balance yourself after this happened. I mean, therapy, yoga, going to group, like, this was really you diving in headfirst to try to, I don't want to say make sense of it, but like,
be proactive.
Just help yourself. Yeah. 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 Be proactive. Okay.
Yeah.
Expand on that a little bit.
So, I mean, I'm surrounded by a lot of great family and friends that all helped each other out in this. Like, we did a memorial golf tournament, like, just within that same year, you know, to raise money for suicide, you know, prevention. And that got us, that got everybody together immediately, right? It wasn't just like, you know, the service and then donezo and then we don't do anything about it, right? And so that, I think, was like the number one key to the start of healing for people. Maybe not for some, for me, I'm only going to talk about myself in this, is like, that was a big thing for me, because, you know, we're partying, and even though my brother hated golf, but my brother, Jeff, loved to have a good time, you know, and we all got together and had a great time. We had a 5-year run on that thing. But I remember specifically Dee Dee Hirsch was the entity that we donated the funds to. They have a 5K run. And so what we would do, what we did was just kind of parlayed it. We gave our proceeds to the 5K. And then, like, when I went to that event for the first time, it was insane. There was hundreds and hundreds of people there. And I'll never forget this. There was like this, I don't know what you want to call it, like pictures of folks that died by suicide, you know, and like, it was like a memorial, like let's call it like a memorial makeshift wall. And I remember seeing all those pictures of people, men, women, young, old, like, you know, no discrimination whatsoever. It happens to everybody, right? And I remember thinking, like, I've seen all those faces, and then looking at everybody that was at this event, I'm like, dude, I am not alone, man. Like, we are, this is like, we're part of a larger tribe now. That was really empowering for me, and that was really healing for me. And, you know, I walked it, but then, like, in the next 2 years, I ran that fucker, you know? Like, I became, like, a little bit of a runner. So that was fun to do that. But again, that was part of being proactive in healing. Now, I didn't set out to go, this is what I'm doing because I want to feel bitching. Like, it wasn't like that. Right. It was just like, oh, let's do this. Well, let's do that. Totally going to do therapy because I'm all about that. You know, I had a really good therapist at the time. Shout out to Dr. DeFraga. She's passed away. But so we were working a lot, you know, after my brother's suicide. So I was just extremely fortunate to have all of the support around me. I had a ton of support. So that was very empowering and very healing.
Yeah.
That's the long part of it.
No, that wasn't long. That was perfect. I want to talk a little bit about just the shift in dialogues around mental health from the period that this happened to now. I feel like there's been progress, but we still have a really long way to go. And with suicide especially, there's a stigma. I mean, whether it's people not knowing what to say or not even wanting to say anything, talk about how that kind of played a role or how you've seen that evolve.
Yeah, I have a couple of nuggets I'll share with you. Like, I remember one of my brother's clients, an older woman, and, you know, because I covered some of his pools after he died, and I remember her specifically coming out and going, like, I can't believe that he would do that to everybody in his family. And I was thinking, like, you little crouchy lady, like, you don't even know what you're talking about, dude. But, yeah. Like, but, you know, like, that kind of symbolizes, like, very old school stigmatic type of thinking, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, like don't talk about it, you know, bury the memory of that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, one of my clients obviously found out what happened to my brother, you know, even though my client didn't know my brother, but he brought up to me, he's like, you know, I haven't talked about this before than anybody, but my brother did the same thing. And he like wanted to donate towards the golf tournament. He thought it was an awesome thing. So for him, it got him out of the stigma of not talking about it, right?
Yes.
So I kind of saw a pattern of like, there's some old school thinking, you know, and like as time and time went on, like, oh, now there's like Dee Dee Hirsch had an 800 number you can call, but now we have 988, by the way. So if you're feeling suicidal out there, dial 988. Or if you even know, or if you see somebody mm-hmm. going through that, 988. So resources have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, like for another example is like taking his own life, you know, like mm-hmm. that was kind of something that I said back then is reframed to because my dear friend Charlotte, she wrote a book. She went through the same type of loss and she said died by suicide. And like, as soon as I read that in her book, I'm like, boom, that just makes sense to me, you know? Mm. And so ever since then, when I talk about my brother to a stranger or somebody, oh, you know, that's how I frame it. It's like, oh, he died by suicide.
And language is so important in having these conversations because I do believe that some of what comes across as stigma is more like unknown. They don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't know what to say. And so the more we do talk about it, we get language and phrases, I think, that resonate with us and can help us connect to people who have experienced something similar. I mean, if you don't have the words to describe it, it's very hard to talk about. Like, where do you even start?
Yeah. And when I talk about it openly,
yeah.
And before you know it, that person that you're talking to has lost somebody, whether it's a family member or a friend or a neighbor or whatever. Everybody is touched by this loss more than you think, more than you think. So that's why I don't mind talking about it, you know, because people got to do some healing too, you know. They don't just jam it down into their gut. I don't know. That's just how I kind of think.
Do you remember the first time you shared it in like a forum type setting? Like not just talking to one person, but you were actually like telling the story with the intention of talking about Jeff's suicide and how it impacted you?
Great question. I haven't really thought about that.
Okay.
That's a good question.
It's been for a while, like at least a decade that you've been talking about it openly.
Yeah. I think on a grand scale, I would say, you know, the Pool Nation podcast is probably the first time that I was really able to like speak about it on a large platform. Yeah.
And I mean, when I first connected with you, I was like, you're a man, you're white, you're, you know, middle aged. Like, you hit on all these criteria that make it a rarity for you to tell your story.
Yeah.
However, your identity overlaps with the population that's the most impacted by this. And that's why I think talking to you is so valuable because you are able to show that both can be true. You can be a strong man who, you know, takes care of your family and has things that you're responsible for, and you can talk about this stuff. And it doesn't take that away or negate that. And even talking about how the loss impacted your life, I think not only speaks to the people who have experienced a similar loss, but also to the people who are experiencing what Jeff felt. You know, I really think that your sharing helps with that a lot.
I remember Jeff at one point said, like, I want to get this figured out and I want to help other people. You know, I remember him saying that, you know, that was really remarkable for him to even say something like that when you're going through it, right?
That kind of makes me think of everything that has happened since he's been gone. I mean, I've always been a person that feels like the universe is universing, like, it's working behind the scenes, but things have really just like been connected in your life. And I feel like it's Jeff up there, like conducting the orchestra. Can you share some of those stories or examples? Because to me, like looking for your person and getting those signs, that's such like a positive part of healing and grief.
There's been some weird, there's been some cool things that have happened. I mean, there can be good things that happen out of a bad situation. Like there really can be. Like I, you know, when I lost Jeff, it was my big brother. But then like a week later, I have this young man start helping me on my route, you know, and he's kind of like a little brother to me. And so it's like, I lose a brother. But I gained another brother. And then the man, you know, a really good family friend of ours, Paul, he bought part of Jeff's route. And so he became my mentor. I might have lost a mentor, but then I gained one. So, you know, to me, I feel that those are all gifts. You know, those are all blessings. And, you know, perhaps Jeff had some orchestrating, like you had to say, you know, like I believe that, you know. Yeah.
And people have almost been like magnetized to you, and then you find out later that they were actually struggling with suicidal thoughts. Like that's happened more than once, where you're just kind of existing with another person, not even talking about the loss or, you know, having this like big sharing moment, but then you find out that that was something they were struggling with. And you were like sharing space with them, and they got through it.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. And you're right. And sometimes, Emily, I'm blind to these things. You know, I really am. But men will put the whole world on their shoulders and think like they just have to crush it. You know, and you know, these are my problems and my problems only, and that's what I have to do with them. I can't share, I can't seek out help. And, you know, well, that's going to do something, you know? And as men too, we're all kind of conditioned to be the hero of the day, you know, and be the Rambo or be the Jason Bourne, you know, or be the James Bond. One person and one person only, that doesn't fly. You need a tribe. Like men need to be with other men and talk about their shit. Like that's surviving. You know, like that's how it. And so to my point is I'm part of this men's organization. And some of that is I've shared my testimony with about my brother, and I've had some guys come up and like thank me, you know, or it's actually got them talking about their situation when they haven't talked about, you know, and like, and I've received positive feedback on them. I'm like, whoa, like that's crazy. Like they're thanking me for this stuff. You know, in fact, I had somebody at the Western Pool and Spa show, a man and his son came up to me like randomly, are you Jay Laurie? I'm like, yeah. I just want to let you know, like the podcast that you did, like it really helped me, man. Like I wanted to take my own life a long time ago. And I just want to thank you, like sharing your story. And like, I wanted to make sure that my son, listen to it too. And it's like, you know, I'm like, I'm trying to hold my shit in, you know, and like be a tiny bit stoic in a way, you know, and like, thank you very much. And like, I'm glad that that helped you, you know, and like, and I walk away. And of course, you know, now it's just waterfalls happening, you know, but, again, I'm just blind that to some of how powerful my testimony can be, to men, you know, because men are suffering out there. They really are. I'm learning that, especially being in this men's organization. Like, you know, the drug addiction, alcohol, porn, you know, they're not a man. They're stressed. These are all these negative outlets for them. And then, of course, depression. And then what do you think is going to happen next? You know, they want to end everything because they can't handle it, you know. You got to seek out help. You got to be part of a group. You got to, whether it's a group of men or seek out therapy or something, like just try and be proactive, you know, confide in a friend, singular friend, you know, it's not a sign of weakness, actually. It's a sign of strength to face, you know, like this is my situation. I feel like shit. Dude, I got to talk to you, man. You know, like that's strength. That's not weakness.
Well, and I think you found so much healing in connecting with other people that experience suicide loss, but also your men's group. I mean, you guys cover a gamut of topics. It's like that's just about a specific thing. And you were saying yesterday, you know, some of them don't participate, right? Maybe they're not sharing all the time. And I was thinking last night, I was like, you know what? That's still them putting themselves in that space. And maybe they're not ready to share yet, but listening, I know, is helping them. And so if you feel like you're struggling and you're not ready to talk about what you're feeling or experiencing, I think you can still seek out those spaces and observe, you know? And yeah, I just think if you're feeling like you're over here on the spectrum and sharing is way over here, like, you don't have to just do that. Like, there's this whole range of seeking help or finding community or connection. And I just want you to share a little bit more about your men's group, because I think the foundation for how you guys function and support each other is a really good model that other people could use. Can you just share more about the group and how it kind of functions?
Sure. Can I plug it?
Of course. Please tell us everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Ryan Mickler is the founder of it. And it's called the Iron Council, but it's also, you can check out the Order of Man podcast, not Order a Man, Order of Man. Okay. There's a big joke about that, by the way. People poke fun at Ryan about that, but there are teams, okay, of men. There's like over 50 teams. And we work on a thing. I'm not going to pull you too far into the weeds, but we work on a thing called a battle plan. And it's not a literal, I mean, life is a battle, right? And so there's four quadrants to it. And we work on those four quadrants. And one of the four that I will share as an example is like conditioning, right? So like a conditioning would be like, okay, I want to lose 10 pounds or whatever, right? And you come up with a system of how you're going to, like, that's your objective. Now, what's your tactics? Okay, I'm going to get 12,500 steps a day, and I'm not going to crush donuts every day, right? Those are your tactics.
Break it down.
Or another one is contribution. Like, what can you do in your community as a man? Like, how can you, like, whether it's like you're going to start a business or you want to get that promotion. So what are you going to do to put that into play of like, if you want your promotion, how are you going to work on that promotion? So it's very focused based. Now your teammates, and then you have your vision statement. Mm. So what do you vision
your North Star?
Exactly. Now your teammates are doing the same thing. So now there's accountability. And then there's, you know, there's some sack taps involved, you know, and there's like some encouraging going on too, but you're part of a tribe, right? And that's what men need. It's very empowering. Mm-hmm. I mean, it helped me retire from alcohol, you know, like there were some dudes there that really inspired me, you know?
And, I love that.
Yeah. And I don't think I'd be able to be retired from alcohol if I wasn't in the Iron Council.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something you said that I just want to hit on before we figure out how we want to wrap this is, you know, you talked about like being of service or being a part of your community. Mm. And I just want to say to anyone who feels like they're struggling, to me, that's such a good thing that you can do to start to fill your own cup. It's like, can you volunteer or can you some way become the person who's supporting or giving back or doing whatever, because that also fuels our own sense of self, you know? And I think there's a lot of loneliness that men experience in that whole, like, carrying it all on my shoulders and just feeling more connected to the people and things around you can kind of help ground you. I mean, it's not going to like fix everything in your life, but when you said that, that just kind of resonated with me that if you're struggling and you don't know where to go, that could be a good start. It's like, how can I be a contributing part of my community? And that could look a variety of different ways.
Totally.
We're going to have more conversation with your friend Charlotte, but to close this conversation out, I want you to share what you want people who have survived a suicide loss to know, maybe especially if they're in the beginning of the journey and feeling still that anger and loneliness in the whole experience. What would you say to them?
I mean, first off, seek help, you know, seek help, and you're not alone. you know, and find, definitely go out and find community, you know, that will empower you and really start the healing process. You know, like, you know, like if there's a 5K run walk, that's a really good starting point. Like nowadays there are a lot, there's actually a lot of resources out there now, you know, luckily, right? Sadly too, because it happens more now, you know, we live in a really weird world now where people get like, people are sad about stuff that's going on in the outside world, you know? Yeah, there's seek out resources, you know.
Anything that you want to say to anyone who maybe is in that state of depression or having suicidal ideation? I know a lot of times they feel like, you know, no one will miss me or no one will notice. And the people that are still here always share that that's quite the opposite. But I would just love, in your own words, anything that you might want to say to them.
There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people out there that love you. So that's not an option. Just go get help. It's okay. It's okay to help yourself. It's totally okay. And everybody will appreciate that. And everybody will support you. You know, so don't let fear control you to seek help. Like, just, yeah, slay that shit.
And start by calling 988.
988, baby. That's
We don't even have to remember a whole phone number anymore. Because let me tell you, that was crazy when people were trying to remember 10-digit numbers.
Yeah.
988.
988.
And not just if you're struggling, if you're worried about someone else, you can call and talk to someone.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on, Jay.
Thank you for allowing me to be on here. Thank you.
So grateful.